week 8 and The Matrix Must Awaken. We're really looking at three films over the next 2 days. Three fairly significant films as opposed to television series, although there have been episodes and TV adaptations of Dune, and obviously The Matrix Reloaded has had an anime series that was built up around the process. And tomorrow, as I say, we're going to be screening Claire Denis, the French director, and her first 2018 horror science fiction movie starring Robert Pattinson, amongst others, which is basically High Life. So it'll be interesting in terms of all three of these texts that we're going to look at have fairly intense philosophical aspects and roots, and we'll go on to discuss some of those later on in the piece today. The reason I've actually entitled the piece The Matrix Must Awaken will become fairly self-evident, hopefully, as we progress through the lecture today. But it is very much looking at the similarities of the films Dune, as directed by David Lynch, again a very interesting and significant filmmaker, and of course The Matrix, which was directed by the Wachowski brothers before they became the Wachowski sisters and became transgendered and obviously moved on to do things such as Cloud Atlas and so on, and Jupiter Rising, Jupiter Ascending, and so on. In terms of the essay that this relates to, well, arguably it does tap in slightly with science fiction and intersexuality. Actually, not slightly, it taps in very much with science fiction and intersexuality, but you can apply it to a number of other sort of key things as well. And again, it hopefully will raise a few kind of key elements which might prove to be thought-provoking and worthwhile considering as well. Just to a show of hands to start off with, has anybody ever seen the film Dune? Excellent. Has anybody ever seen the film The Matrix? Yeah, okay, fine. So I thought I'd kind of guessed that right. The bulk of this sort of thing will be focusing on The Matrix, although Dune, based on the Frank Herbert novel of the 1960s, is well worth accessing. There is actually going to be a remake in the offing in the very near future. There has been a mini-series as well. And it arguably is the first eco-narrative or epic eco-narrative that science fiction kind of produced in terms of the 60s. It actually is dedicated to the planetary environmental ecologists and so on. It also, in terms of the original movie in the 1980s, starred a young Kyle MacLachlan as the lead character, Paul Atreides, and also was probably one of the early motion picture debuts of a certain Patrick Stewart. So lots of other sort of key things coming across from that. Now, Sir Patrick Stewart, of course. So, what are we talking about in terms of this particular messiah complex? This is something that very much relates to both particular texts. And if you've seen The Matrix, you'll be familiar with the ones on the right-hand side. And I trust to the fullest of time, you can, through the magic of Amazon Prime or other things, begin to familiarise yourself with some of the other elements as well. I did consider having Dune as a part of the screening tomorrow, but again, I might possibly sort of still introduce it at the back end of the piece, but we will go, as I say, with Claire Denis' piece. The lead characters in both are male, and in the case of Dune, it is the character of Paul Atreides, later to be referred to as Paul Muad'Dib, later to be referred to as the Kwisatz Haderach, a name that's literally in the translation from the Bene Gesserit, or the Dune Harkonnen, translates as the Messiah. The similarity with respect to The Matrix is that the Keanu Reeves character is first introduced as Thomas Anderson, and again, Anderson in itself echoes the notion of the man, the one, Andros as in Greek for the man, and so on. He's also referred to as Neo, which of course is a reverse of the one. And again, it very much fulfills the whole notion of the Christ narrative, basically, of a saviour complete with superpowers towards the end of the first Matrix movie. In keeping with an awful lot of biblical narratives and structures that relate to that, both of our lead characters undergo a journey. Technical term would be Bildungsroman, B-I-L-D-U-N-G-S-R-O-M-A-N, Bildungsroman. a narrative that's often used to apply to the journey that heroes will actually pass through on their journey from adolescence into manhood and so on, or again working through that process. And that journey can often be through choice, or it can be a case of through accident. But in this case, it's very much a case of both undergoing a journey, quite literally in the case of Paul Atreides, from the water world in many ways of the Atreides through to the desert planet of Dune, and in the case of obviously Thomas Anderson being given the opportunity by Morpheus to take either the blue pill or the red pill. Arguably, again, the notion of an inner journey of discovery versus an external of discovery. But both of these things actually relate to the whole essence of knowledge, self-knowledge, and self-discovery. And the desert motif, again, is very well worn in terms of the notion of how the desert in the Bible, 40 days in the desert, the leading through the desert of Moses and the Israelites and so on, both Old Testament and New Testament, the motif of the desert is very much there. Where is the desert in the case of the Matrix? Well, it's postmodern. It is the desert of the unreal, as referred to by Baudrillard. Quite literally, the sort of sense of unreal, the notion that we live in a world where we relate to fellow virtual symbols in a sea of virtual unreality. In other words, we might all be basically unconscious. We haven't reached that level of consciousness that really addresses what reality is, what things are actually going on just beyond our levels of perception. In the case of Dune, there is a sequence between Paul Atreides and his father, Duke Leto Atreides, where he actually uses the term, Paul the sleeper must awaken. And the first thing that we actually see with respect to the Matrix, of course, is the words, wake up Neo, appearing literally on the computer screen. So that whole essence of rising from a consciousness, the oft parodied and oft considered Eastern motif that are we effectively asleep, dreaming of our consciousness, or is it when we're only unconscious that we actually really start re-experiencing reality and so on? And both Paul Atreides and Thomas Anderson, Neo, have a mentor, a figure very much in the line of Obi-Wan Kenobi, if you're looking at the Star Wars notion, which again makes use of the desert planet Tatooine, of course. In the case of Atreides, it's the character Gurney Halleck, played by the aforementioned Sir Patrick Stewart. And in the case of Thomas Anderson, it's Morpheus, played by Lawrence Fishburne. Not to be confused with Samuel Jackson, completely different character, completely different actor. And in terms of female relationships, we have in the case of The Matrix, the character of Trinity, played by Carrie-Anne Moss. And Shani, in the case of Thomas Anderson, I've swapped those around quite deliberately because, again, they sort of work through that. Shani relates to Dune and Trinity in the case of The Matrix. So, again, they echo on that sort of side of things. Interchangeability that we actually get from that point of view. Shani is actually played by Sean Young, who had also come to fame in the 1980s for, of course, being the character Rachel in the movie Blade Runner. As I say, both of these films, and arguably to a certain extent High Life Tomorrow, actually deal with the notion of cyberspace, folding space, the expansion of the consciousness, that notion that beyond our particular conscious worlds there are a whole range of new experiences just tantalizingly out of reach, or maybe within reach, maybe through using the notion of either the red pill or the blue pill, or the spice melange in the case of Dune. Melange can be seen as a metaphor for the oil industry, because it's the artifact that effectively enables the guild navigators to traverse huge areas of space, to fold space, which is essential in terms of the epic universe that Frank Herbert actually paints for us in terms of Dune, and that David Lynch adheres to as well. If you're going to have an adventure, it may as well be an epic adventure. needs to actually be something which literally takes one through a series of changes, a series of developments, and so on. And this whole essence of the bringer of change, and how that life primarily is all about change, is at the forefront of it. It was Nietzsche who actually coined the phrase, to control something, you must destroy it first. God is dead, was his line, his text that he put together. The original German, was man nicht übrigt, macht man stärker, what doesn't destroy one makes one stronger, is at the heart of Friedrich Nietzsche's philosophical approach to life and so on. In other words, the notion that actually destroying something creates something. I mean, this is something that's been echoed, including the notion of Thanos in the Avenger movies as well from that point of view. The notion of how things are developed from that point of view. And ultimately, the classic Eastern philosophy of nobody is completely 100% male and nobody is completely 100% female. There are layers of maleness, of femaleness. There's the yin and the yang, the aspect that circulates around that male-female axis. One the creator, one the destroyer. Both sides actually need it to fit together. And again, returning to that biblical motif, both Paul Atreides and Neo are in essence betrayed. They're both sold down the river. They also have to cope with that Judas element that comes across as well. What we actually get with respect to this then is clearly a text where both of them are, from a textual analysis point of view, clearly seen as undergoing real change. You've got both revolution, and again it's the reason the sequels to The Matrix, often underrated, were referred to as The Matrix Revolutions and so on, and evolution, change and development within that. Simultaneously occurring at the same time, you have crises and a resolution. So you've got that complete sort of uniformity aspect of worlds within worlds and different aspects. And again, to journey out into space, as Ad Astra would actually say, or as indeed we looked at the Interstellar, you need to journey inwards as well. It's the same kind of epic sort of thing that you're working through. Your journey into outer space, the macroverse, your journey into inner space, the microverse. So a lot of these things are classic tropes that you get across science fiction films. They're addressing those kind of issues. What does it mean like to what does it mean to travel? How do we actually relate to that external sort of world versus the internal world as well? How does that relate to that? And you can, and so if you're looking at just analysing both, use basic structuralism to actually start seeing how they can be split up into a series of binary oppositions. And as Saussure, the father of structuralism, would actually say, it's the difference between those oppositions that creates the meaning in the text. You know, you're good and evil, male and female, up, down, below, above, out, in. All of these key things are creating that meaning. If you go through the black hole, to approach the black hole, to where we actually see the perception of things being in terms of that, and how the narrative develops. It's going back very much to the notion of props, morphology of the folktale, and arguably again Hero of a Thousand Faces, all sort of classic ways in which the formula you get for various texts are beginning to be unpicked and developed and so on. So if we're looking at science fiction and intertextuality then, how else can we actually, if we chose to say, look at science fiction and intertextuality with respect to The Matrix, what other things would we actually see them develop? Well, there are four of them right up there. Clearly Alice in Wonderland, down the rabbit hole, time to say bye-bye to Kansas Dorothy, Wizard of Oz. You've got a whole range of sort of aspects that are within that that are clearly referencing cultural texts that the expectation of the filmmakers is that they're familiar to the audience. Otherwise, they're lost completely. That's the whole essence of intertextuality. You need to be able to get the illusion. Otherwise, it's missed out. Lawrence of Arabia, as I say, carries with it the notion of, again, a leader, a messiah, the desert, the whole aspect that comes across within that. And the New Testament, as I mentioned, has got lots of sort of developments that start applying itself to how we see the Christ-like figure, the disciples developing, and so on and so forth. And Neuromancer, if you're not familiar, generally regarded as, together with Blade Runner, the real godfather of the cyberpunk aspect of science fiction, the whole notion of William Gibson, where he really sort of launched this whole essence of how a cyberpunk, which is really manifested on the screen in The Matrix, is all rooted in that whole side of things. Itself, of course, tying in with Blade Runner, which, as Gibson himself said, also was borrowing out of his ideas, but that was then in turn based on an adaptation of Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? So again, you're sort of developing that. But that whole notion of living in cyberspace, terms that we tend to take for granted now in terms of avatars, in terms of virtual reality, in terms of cyberspace itself, were coined for the first time in the early 80s with the publication in 84 of William Gibson's Neuromancer and so on. And Bruce Sterling obviously working within that whole notion of the worlds within the world. I mean, you could say Tron, to a point, also echoes that. You've got other sort of aspects as well. This notion that the landscape is more than just what we can physically see, but it's in the other worlds that we create, that we rule over, that we develop. Or maybe they rule over us. Maybe we are just destined to be power systems for an overall computer system. I'll give you a few seconds to actually just consider that particular quote that's taken from Dune. But broadly speaking, what it's addressing is the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. That notion that for omniscience to occur, you need to basically sort of be in two parts at the same time. And that whole notion of human beings in a planetary ecosystem, there are finite resources. This is where, as I said, Dune was regarded as being a clear metaphor for the whole ecological movement. And in an age of extinction agenda material and so on and so forth, it's a case of quality of life, how that's being presented to us, how that's being represented to us, etc. Again, if you're not familiar with Dune, this might help you sort of, if you ever get around to looking at it, but it's just one of those sort of lines that is used by, in this particular case, the character Pardo Kynes, the first planetologist of the desert planet Arrakis, how things are working through that, and the notion of how, as numbers increase, freedom decreases. How do we actually develop that? Should we actually care about that? Or is it a case of checks and balances coming to place and ultimately things will work out for the better? Another line that comes through there from a character called Irulan is the notion of religion and beauty and feminism and issues relating to that. Again, I don't want to spend too much time working through that, but it's again ways in which the text is given additional texture, given a little bit of roughage, developing that. Within the actual piece itself, the Bene Gesserit sisterhood are effectively seen. It's very much analogous, I suppose, to the Magisterium in Philip Pullman's Dark Materials series. You've got a controlling religious order who effectively look after and effectively run the majority of the known galaxy and elements within that whole process. And of course, you know my quote, from Arthur C. Clarke, which I love to use every so often, which could be A or any, but sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Nice to see some Harry Potter representation in the classroom today. Is that a Harry Potter scarf?
Yes.
So, well done, sir. There is a reference to both in Dune and in The Matrix to the, hesitant to use the term evil, but the notion that somehow artificial intelligence is wrong. That just as in the 2001 Space Odyssey, the whole notion of how the computer can go out of control, the robots can revolt and so on, that actually we need to maintain our humanity. And again, that notion of the Orange Catholic Bible, the OC Bible. Thou shalt not make a machine in the likeness of a human mind, kind of raises the fears that very much are manifested in terms of what we see in The Matrix, where the machines have actually taken control because singularity has been reached. It's clear that the machines, to them at least, can run the planet much more efficiently than human beings, so let's just hand over to them. That's the key thing. That's the ultimate sort of text in terms of how The Matrix works, we're living in, and The Terminator as well, to a certain extent. That whole notion of Skynet the ways in which that sort of develops. You have the machines as the overall rulers of human beings. Herbert and indeed David Lynch make a great deal of this little mantra: I must not fear, fear is the mind killer, fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. Something that the lead characters tend to use when they're not only undergoing the Gom-Jabbar test of pain and so on, pain by nerve induction, but how they can actually cope within that whole feeling as well. And that test the leaders go through, the tests that also Thomas Anderson goes through, a series of tests. Tests of loyalty, tests of endurance, tests of knowing things, how to cope with that whole process. It's very much the form of how things are developing. Now, these are nothing new. You can go back to Plato in the period of ancient Greece, and the notion of cave of shadows, the illusions which in the cave, you simply sort of, the inhabitants of the cave, their only experience of reality is what they see flickering on the wall. Same sort of dreams that Baudrillard goes on to see. And the notion of to be is to be perceived. Sort of elements in terms of how we see ourselves and how we see others. Do we cease to exist when we no longer are in the perceptual gaze of the Almighty, God, and so on and so forth? That's the opening dedication that Frank Herbert actually puts in the opening of his text, which is also echoed in the film as well, in terms of very much it's looking at ecology and the sense of the Gaia hypothesis, the notion of one planet, one overview, one overall ecosystem that works for us all. And again, I'll leave you with that. I mean, all of these slides are on Blackboard. You can look at them at length and again use them as and when you see fit from that point of view. But it does sort of address the whole notion of where this force that George Lucas makes a great play of in terms of his midichlorians or his lines about that whole system, where it develops, how it works through that, how in an era where basically we are simply empty space comprised of lots and lots of molecules and areas within that, how do we actually exist within that process as well? That whole notion of the journey from inner space to outer space, from the macroverse to the microverse, all interconnecting together on that. That's the opening line from Dune, by the way, in terms of the film. The beginning is the time for taking the most delicate care. The balances are correct. Okay, Pat Cadigan, in 2003, in his text Exploring the Matrix, which is really at a time where the Matrix was seen as a way of entering into more than just pop culture philosophy, he came up with that particular line of things. And again, there are an awful lot of key aspects within that. As just looking at that, Christian exegesis, a redeeming myth, a death and a rebirth, a hero and self-discovery, Homer's Odyssey, Jean Baudrillard, I've already mentioned, science fiction ontological riffs of the Philip K. Dick school. Philip K. Dick, who, as I say, is responsible for Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, filmed as Blade Runner. We Can Remember It For You Wholesale, filmed as Total Recall. Minority Report, filmed as Minority Report. And a whole wealth of material that Dick actually sort of gave to the science fiction community before he passed away in the early 80s. The biblical references go on even further, because the ship in The Matrix is entitled the Nebuchadnezzar. You know, that's the name of the actual ship that you actually see, the title of a biblical king from that point of view. We have the notion of the Buddha, the Buddhist philosophy. The notion of the spoon bends, or does the spoon adjust to its own sort of world? Taoism. The balance between male and female, as we've said. Martial arts mysticism, oracular prophecy, spoon bending, we already mentioned, telekinesis, even Houdini stage show magic, the art of the filmmaker, and of course Joseph Campbell, Hero of a Thousand Faces, and mathematical metaphysics from the Godelian knot as well. It's just got everything. You know, you never see any other movie at all. This is it. This is the actual number one. You know, after this, surely everything else is there. But it is a postmodern philosophical movie. it works through that whole notion again. Fragments of Philosophy do this Casablanca cliche dance. You know, Casablanca works as a movie because it's full of cliches, but they're good cliches from that point of view. Can you say that about Dune? I'd argue you can. I think you can probably say it about most science fiction texts, depending on where you're unpicking, what you're unpicking, what you're developing within that whole process. Let's just turn now to just a short clip from Dune itself before we move on to a slightly longer version, which opens up this whole essence of the sleeper must awaken from midway into the sequence. Dune, we actually see the very emotive piece where Paul Atreides says the sleeper has awakened, the sleeper has awakened. So again, lots of similarities in terms of how the thing's actually operating, how it's developing. I'm going to share the slightly longer now elements from The Matrix, which might give you one or two sort of thoughts in terms of how the narrative has really been rooted very much in philosophical thoughts. I mean, that notion of sci-fi, as opposed to sci-fi, and elements that also cross over in terms of a number of sort of key areas. And then we'll hopefully have a chance to speak at the end of it about how you found it.